Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill, and by popular demand, I am delighted again to be able to speak to Paul Pagano, CEO of Lung Life AI, a next-generation developer of medical diagnostics to identify and treat early-stage lung cancer. So welcome, Paul.
Thank you. Wonderful to be here.
Yeah, well, big congrats on today's inline interims. But we sort of start, you know, digging into the detail. I don't suppose you could quickly remind investors of what exactly the company's breakthrough sort of lung LB test does, how it works, and importantly, what problem, medical problem, it actually solves.
Yeah, so we're obviously focused on lung cancer, and it really suffers from an early detection problem. Right now in the United States, 350 people die every single day. And the reason is because most of the time it's detected too late. The very few lung cancers that are caught early are really done so by chance when the patient happens to get a CT scan. They find an abnormal growth. These are called indeterminate lung nodules. And it's these indeterminate nodules that can be very challenging for the doctors to evaluate. Right now, there's two tools that they can use. There's the wait and see pathway. That's where patients will get another CT scan in 6 or 12 months, see if there's any growth in that nodule. And you can imagine that leads to a lot of patient anxiety. Any delays in treatment can reduce the potential to have a cure. And then the other option is to have a biopsy. And this is where you stick a long needle across the chest wall, get a little piece of that nodule. And 1 in 5 of these results in an adverse event. That's uncontrolled bleeding, collapsed lung. There are even the people who have died as a result of having these biopsies. And then when you couple that with the fact that 40% of them return a no lung cancer diagnosis, it means we're putting a lot of people in harm's way for no reason. And so doctors are really looking for something to help with that evaluation process. And that's why we developed the Lung LB test. It starts off with a simple blood draw, which doctors love because they're already drawing blood as part of the standard workup ahead of biopsy. And once we receive that, we process it in our CLIA lab in California, and we isolate circulating tumor cells. We have our own patented methodologies that we use. We detect them with a process called FISH. This is where you apply light signals to the DNA, and you can pick them up on the microscope. Then we use an artificial intelligence algorithm that we've developed to interpret those light signals and then automatically sort the circulating tumor cells from the regular blood cells. The whole process takes around a week from when we receive the sample to when we get the results back to the doctor.
Right. Okay. So if I'm a sort of physician and I've got this guy who comes in and he's basically coughing, et cetera, he's a smoker, I don't know, 55. I tell him to go and have a CT scan. He comes back. And as you say, I don't know whether it's cancerous, it's a cancerous nodule or it's a benign nodule there. That test will then kick in at your time with it, that blood test, yeah.
That's absolutely right. So if it seems to be a cancerous nodule, then the doctor will go ahead and do more follow-up with the patient. For example, they might do a biopsy, they might do surgery. And importantly, if it looks like it's a benign nodule or not cancerous, then they can go into that wait-and-see pathway more comfortably, knowing that it's unlikely to be a cancer. That's absolutely right.
So it's basically where I'm scratching my head and thinking, I'm not sure what this is, but it looks worrying anyway. Okay, so what's the accuracy? Or just, I know you're waiting for your validation study, and we'll get into this later, but just from sort of like the preliminary studies that I've done, what sort of typical accuracy does it give me, say, as that physician, to be able to have reassurance that when the blood test comes back and it says the guy's clear or he's actually, you know, positive, he's got lung cancer, how much confidence do I have in that result?
Yeah, so we had our initial study, our pilot publication that was accepted in a peer-reviewed medical journal just actually in June, a couple of months ago. And we showed that lung LB test had an 89% positive predictive value. To put that in the context, anytime the lung LB test is positive, that means there's an 89% chance that individual has lung cancer. And to compare that versus what standard of care is, it's right now around 60% PPV. Positive predictive value, that's the physician's ability to evaluate the nodule. They believe it's cancer and go ahead and schedule that biopsy. Again, 40% of the time it ends up not being lung cancer. And that's why they're right around 60% of the time. And so we're hoping to replicate that, yeah, in our pivotal study.
So that really is statistically significant, isn't it, as an improvement?
And what it is, right? I mean, when you know, 60% of the time you're getting it right versus 89% of the time, you're talking a big shift in the ability to care for patients.
Yeah. I mean, basically 9 out of 10, you're right, aren't you? So that's pretty damn good. Now, what's sort of like the addressable market? I mean, I know I actually did see a quote that somewhere that you've done 1 in 16 people in their lifetime will be diagnosed with lung cancer. So I'm guessing this is an enormous potential addressable market.
Yeah, I mean, you can imagine it being the number one cancer killer, that there's a significant opportunity for us to make an impact in patients' lives. As I mentioned earlier, we're focused on indeterminate lung nodules. So these are mostly the earlier stage cancer, when you can potentially have a cure for those patients. It is a niche entry point. There's around 1.5 million nodules detected every single year in the United States alone. There are even more when you combine it with a lung cancer screening program. We're estimating the total addressable market to be somewhere between $3 and $6 billion. That's based on our current Medicare price of the test, which is around $2,000 a test. Initially, we believe doctors are mostly going to order these for what are called intermediate risk nodules. And that's sort of the no man's land where doctors are really confused. It's a coin flip. It could either be cancer or benign. They're really the most challenging to evaluate. And that represents around 10-15% of all nodules found every year. Eventually, though, we expect that over time and after we prove ourselves, that doctors are going to expand this to all nodule types, high, intermediate, and low risk.
Okay. And then let's just assume again that, say, I'm this hypothetical doctor, this physician, et cetera, and I'm working for the government looking after a lot of veterans, and they've obviously had been subject to really extreme conditions, and many of them have been smokers, and some of them have actually not been smokers, have actually been passive smokers, have been exposed to this sort of like, you know, heavy smoking. I presume that if I was that sort of physician, I would be pretty keen to actually have something like this, you know, in my hands, in the toolbox.
Absolutely. I mean, veterans are thought to be generally at higher risk for lung cancer because of what they're exposed to during military service. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been in the news lately, but a couple of years ago, they were talking about all of the burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. This is essentially where they burn everything, expired fuel, ammunition, food waste, medical waste, et cetera. And these soldiers were exposed to this 24 hours a day, all of this smoke. And so, yes, we're very interested in helping out the veteran population. In fact, almost half of the clinical study sites in our pivotal validation study included Veterans Affairs hospitals because we wanted to understand how the technology worked in that patient population. So a lot of the VA physicians are very keen to utilize this test. They can see the power in helping them identify lung cancer earlier in these really susceptible patients.
Yeah. And then just coming back to the actual accuracy, so if I'm this doctor, how is there any difference in accuracy between smokers and non-smokers? Because I did read somewhere that there's a lot of non-smokers now are getting lung cancer. In fact, to be perfectly honest, my mum got it about 40 years ago, and she wasn't a smoker. So, you know, it is very prevalent, isn't it?
And Paul, that's becoming more common. Actually, we've seen over the past 10 years, an increase in the rate of non-smoking lung cancer, particularly in younger women in their 40s. Mm. And the clinical and environmental reasons of why that's happening, we're not sure about, but it's something that was important to Lung Life. So we designed our studies to include both current, former, as well as never smokers, which is, it's kind of atypical. But one of the things that was in our publication was the performance of smokers versus non-smokers, how the technology performed at different nodule sizes. We did quite a bit of sub-analysis. And what we found is that the technology can basically have the same level of performance, whether the patient had never smoked or they had smoked, you know, 2-3 packs a day for 30 years. So that was something that we were really pleased with because, again, it's an increasing demographic. And we wanted to make sure that our technology was able to address that need.
Yeah, that's that'd be fabulous for a doctor, no doubt about it. Now, in just in terms of the say that pivotal 425 patient validation study, how are we progressing? Because I understand it's finished, and you're just sort of trying to collate the results at the moment.
Yeah, so we started that in February of last year, and we just completed enrollment. As you mentioned, 425 patients. That was finished in May. We still estimate that the results of the test are going to be available in September. Just so your listeners are aware, the 425 patients each have around 10 forms worth of data. And that data needs to be verified and quality checked before we can run the analysis. So right now the team is very busy sifting through essentially thousands of forms for accuracy and completeness. But once we have those results in September, the idea is to go out to the market and let them know how we're doing. And then eventually that will go similar to the pilot study and the health economic study, which came out in February of this year, that will go into a peer-reviewed manuscript for publication.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm looking forward to that. Only sort of 6 or 7 weeks away. So you guys won't be having a holiday over the summer. So apologies.
Not much sleep is going on over here.
Yeah, I know. I can imagine. Anyway, in the interim, you mentioned two important studies that had already been done. One was the peer review of your initial sort of like, your study, which you did with 100 odd patients, and also the cost effective benefit analysis of the test. You'll just walk us through both of those and the significance and what it means in terms of helping the business commercialize the Lung LB test, assuming that it's going to be positive for the with the validation study.
Yeah, so we were very pleased to have both manuscripts published in the first half of this year. And the peer-reviewed publications really serve many purposes. Of course, they raise awareness about the company and the technology and what we're trying to do to both the scientific and the medical communities. They really provide a high level of credibility because of that peer review process. So your listeners are aware, this is where other doctors will evaluate the quality of our work and the results, and then make the decision of whether or not it's worthy to publish. And then both publications are actually evaluated by payers here in the United States. So we have public payers, Medicare, Medicaid, as well as private insurers. And they like to see that these papers have undergone the peer review process. So there's really multiple reasons why these are important. Now, the pilot publication, that was on 151 study participants. They all had indeterminate nodules, and we were looking at the results of the biopsy and comparing that to results of our blood test to see how often it matched. And that's where we got the 89% positive predictive value. So that publication was really a signal to the community of, this is what we believe the test performance is. And our next step, we're going to validate in a larger 425 patient study. The second publication you mentioned was focused on health economics. While payers, of course, are highly focused on better outcomes for patients, they also want to make sure that they keep health expenditures in check. And that's what we showed in our health economics study. So we basically had proved in that publication that the Lung LB test is cost effective when you add it with the normal sort of standard of care diagnostic pathway for indeterminate nodules. In fact, it really highlighted that Lung LB came in at 25% below the willingness to pay threshold here in the United States. And so that's a really good signal to payers like Medicare, Blue Cross Blue Shield, United Healthcare, that the Lung LB is cost effective. Not only is it beneficial to patients, but it's going to meet your bottom line.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it certainly convinced me then as a doctor. If it saves me money and helps me treat my patients better, then it's a win-win, isn't it? It's a no-brainer, that one. Even I can understand that one. Now, assuming that we do get positive results from the validation study at the, you know, by the end of September, what would be the next sort of like commercialization sort of like major milestones in terms, particularly in terms of sort of insurance cover, and then FDA. You don't definitely need it, you know, but that's, and then sort of like launching it and getting partners and getting it into doctors' hands.
Yeah, so we've really been working hard from the beginning to build a strong foundation for commercial readiness, always assuming that the pivotal study results were going to be positive. So we already have our CLIA lab and our New York State CLIA permit. This gives us authorization to provide the test in 47 states at this point, and it really is the first step in your commercialization pathway. It allows you to start reimbursement. Just as a reminder for reimbursement, there are three parts. There's code, which we already have, that was granted in 2022. There's price, and we were awarded a crosswalk price by Medicare of $2,000 a test that became effective January 1st this year. And then the last component is going to be coverage. Coverage is basically where the payers, such as Medicare, will say, yes, we will actually pay for the test. So they're going to be looking for our validation results, which again, we're going to be getting in September. They're also going to be looking for that health economics data, which check, we have that as well. The last thing that they're going to be looking for is test usefulness. And this is one of the early milestones that investors should look for after the validation study. We want to understand, does this help influence the doctor's decision-making? Does it help with the nodule evaluation process? So that's what we're going to get in what's called our early access program. That's where we have physicians right now who are keen on ordering the test, and then they'll give us feedback. Did it influence my decision-making? Did it reduce delays in treatment? That's where we'll get our initial evidence of utility for the technology, and that will allow us to engage with Medicare as well as other payers.
Okay.
Now, in the early days, it's likely that when we bill for our test, that we're going to receive denials. This is very typical for new diagnostic tests in healthcare.
What's denial? Just for the read, for the
No, great question. So when we submit a bill to the insurance company because we provided a service to the patient, they will say we're not going to pay for that because it hasn't been proven to be medically necessary. But we have doctors that are ordering this test, and really it's the doctor taking care of the patient. So they'll say no. We're going to deny you payment. What we've done is, you know, again, assuming we're going to have positive test results, we've engaged what's called a revenue cycle management company. These are experts who have a lot of experience in dealing with appealing denials. So this is a way to reverse that denial, prove to the insurance company that this is a useful test. So we expect that some of those denials will be overturned and that we'll actually be able to collect money on those. Again, in the early days, it's not going to be a whole lot, but typically over time, as utilization increases, doctors continue to order the test, more evidence is built around the usefulness of the test, we'd expect that the successful number of appeals increases and the number of denials to decrease. Again, this is very typical of advanced diagnostic tests that are new to the market.
Okay. Yeah, that's sort of peculiarity for
the US reimbursement.
Once the NHS doctor does it, then it gets paid. Eventually, anyway, it takes time. But are we still looking? So first sales should be towards the back end of 2023.
Yeah, we'd expect first nominal revenues towards the end of this year, based on those appeal processes. And then Paul, you had mentioned FDA, and I didn't touch on that. Sorry, but you know, we've talked about FDA before. We think it's important. It's why we've run our study to sort of FDA standards. It's very rigorous, but we believe that's going to provide confidence to doctors, payers, as well as the patients. But FDA, again, it's voluntary. We can commercialize with our CLIA license alone. And that'll be important, right? Because we anticipate submitting to the FDA towards the end of this year, but we probably won't hear back from them for another year, year and a half. That's what we've seen the approval process taking. But again, with our CLIA license, we can start commercializing as soon as we have the results in hand, which is what we've been planning to do since day one.
Gotcha. And then the sales should really sort of kick in next year, I guess.
Yeah, we think so. We think as doctors become more familiar with the technology and words gets out, that we'll see that ramp up in test sales.
Okay. And then what about the sort of the international angle for it? Because obviously in Europe and in the UK, we have a big lung cancer problem.
Yeah, so it's lung cancer isn't exclusively a U.S. problem. It's the number one cancer killer worldwide. 2 million cases every single year are diagnosed in the world. So there are significant opportunities outside the U.S. We've sublicensed this to a firm in China to address the Chinese market. And eventually we'd be looking to do something similar with other countries or work with distributors, for example, and continue to run the test here in our California lab. That's a model that we have past experience with. It works really well because you end up leveraging that group's knowledge of their home market and their respective regulations. But in the near term, we're very acutely focused on the US market first.
Yeah, okay. And what about sort of like future R&D to sort of like, you know, further improve the sort of efficacy and, you know, sort of like, you know, the accuracy or whatever of the test or add in a suite of tests? What's the sort of like the sort of roadmap there?
Yeah, so the more we run this test, really, the more we learn about it. And generally, we have a responsibility to the patients that we serve to give them the highest quality, best performing test possible. So with those learnings, we continue to improve our algorithms. The test continues to get stronger. In fact, we just filed another patent application about 6 weeks ago that's likely going to support a future iteration of the lung LB test. And in lung cancer, generally, there are more opportunities to expand in other aspects of early detection. So what I mean by that is right now, we follow the CT scan, indeterminate nodules found, order the lung LB test. But we're already having physicians ask us, can this be used concurrently with the CT scan? Or for some patients, can we put the test in front of the CT scan? Because some of these folks have to travel 2 hours, 3 hours just to get a CT. And so there's opportunities to expand within the lung cancer space. And then something that we're very interested in is other cancer types. So initially we're going after lung. Again, it's the number one cancer killer, so we can make a significant impact. But we believe the test may be useful in other cancer types. We have some preliminary data. It's very limited information, but it's promising. And that's something that we'll be pursuing in the future.
Okay, good. And then just in terms of sort of the cash runway, I understand at the half year, you have about sort of $5.4 million left. You burnt through about $2.5 million in the first half. So just doing the math, we'd say you've got about 12 months of sort of cash sort of availability.
Yeah, that's pretty close. So our runway is until mid-2024. That's very similar to what we reported in our 2022 full year results just 6 months ago.
Good. Okay. And then sort of like ultimately in 5 years' time, I know it's difficult to sort of like pitch, where would you see the sort of the business or hopefully see the business sort of like, you know, expand to? Because it's obviously going from a zero turnover at the moment or near enough to sort of what sort of size would you hope it would get in the next 5, 6, 7 years?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to speculate too much on the size of the business, but the opportunity is significant, right? So right now we're focused on that niche channel to market, the indeterminate nodules. Again, prove ourselves with the nodules. And then there's significant opportunity to expand to different parts of early detection. Again, potentially at the same time or before the CT scan. I think it would be great if we can get into other cancer types as well. Again, once we've proven ourselves in lung, because there's a significant opportunity there.
Okay, good. Well, there's definitely a massive upside. And I would highlight to investors that Investec have got a target price of about £2.20 on the stock compared to a share price of just less than 60p. So there's plenty to highlight how much potential there is in for stockholders. Okay, well, brilliant. Well, thanks very much for your time again, Paul. And I'm really, really looking forward to touching base at the when the results come out later in September.
As am I. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, Paul. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.